Five, four, three, two, one.
Welcome to a bonus edition of the Ready, Set, Poem podcast, your premier podcast covering both the Toronto Defiant and the Vancouver Titans. I am Chris at Light Force, joined virtually by no one. Well, at least not yet. Unfortunately, my colleagues, Omni at Omni Strife and Jordan at Sir Dr. JM weren't able to join me today. But I do have a very special guest joining me in a quick moment to talk about what's going on in the world of Toronto Defiant. We have Till Verderman. He is the Senior Director of Team Operations with Overactive Media, involved with the Toronto Defiant, but also the Toronto Ultra, as well as the Mad Lions. And he's going to talk to us a little bit about how the operations of the team have come together. Our focus of the conversation is going to be more on the business side and the organization. So if you are tuning in, you're like, oh, I really want to hear his perspective as to the meta that the Defiant are going to plan for. That's not this show. Our conversation with Kasouras just a couple of weeks back is probably the one that you'd want to go listen to if you haven't done so already. And as well as with our bonus episodes as part of our Overwatch League 2023 preseason interview series, these bonus episodes are focused more on the conversation with our guest. Yes, lots is going on in the league, some of which is through official channels, other unofficial. The Pro-Am in the Western region is going to get underway soon. We'll talk more about that in our show next week, our regularly scheduled episode over the course of the off season. And we may be coming back to our regular season schedule in the very, very near future. So you will want to stay tuned. But here, without further ado, let's bring in Till.
Bring it on! I live for this!
So I'm pleased to be joined by Till Verderman. He is the Senior Director of Team Operations at Overactive Media, covering the Mad Lions, the Toronto Ultra, but the more important team in my mind, the Toronto Defiant. He is joining us, just pulling the curtain back a little bit, from his base of operations in Germany. So as you could have probably appreciated as our listeners, that time zones are quite complex. But Till, thanks for taking time out of your schedule to join me.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, we were obviously, you know, recording sort of on a weekly basis with different guests. And, you know, we really were looking to hear more about the Toronto Defiant perspective from a higher level, but like the business side of things. And we're really, you know, happy that you're able to fill in for Adam, who originally we had booked. And then obviously, you know, lots of things have happened since then. And, you know, I think it's a great opportunity, not only for you to let, you know, Defiant fans know what might be going on, but in a broader sense, our listener base, just to hear more about the operations of teams. Cause I think for us, we all sit on the outside and we make assumptions. We dive into Reddit and, you know, theory craft and, you know, fantasy draft, you know, how we think everything's happening. But here we have someone who's actually on the inside who can, you know, share those details. Before we dive into, you know, what's going on in the world of the Defiant, I thought this would be an opportunity to, you know, introduce yourself to our listeners. I mean, I mentioned your role, Senior Director of Team Operations, and the fact that you're in Germany. But could you tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are today in the world of esports?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually started in League of Legends. I've played League of Legends very early on in beta when it came out. And I founded like a German clan, you would call it at the time. It really came from the old MMORPG days. I used to play a lot of Runes of Magic and everyone had a guild back in the day and things like that. So I founded my own thing there and it was just people to play together. It wasn't really a competitive thing at the time. I mean, esports was much smaller as well. But at some point we got challenged to a clan war with another clan and we played that and it was streamed on, I think it was Orange3D2 or one of the like older streaming websites. And it was just so much fun sitting on TeamSpeak with all your mates, watching your own, like your best players of your clan compete against somebody else. And that's when kind of the first world championship came up for League of Legends and other esports. You would see that. And I was like, this is amazing. This is great fun. And I tried to build a team that would tried to qualify for EULCS as well, but we kind of failed ultimately there. And then I eventually joined Planet Key Dynamics as the first real eSportLog, a German team. I actually joined as a writer, but eventually kind of transitioned into team management and kind of became the director of team operations there. We won a couple German championships in League of Legends and Counter-Strike, StarCraft. Went to CSGO Major, which was super fun. And actually, I think towards the end of the day, I also started playing a lot of Overwatch when it came out, which was great fun. It was a good Reinhardt one trick. And then eventually I applied for Splice as a video editor, was one of the first people hired at Splice. I think it was basically just a Skype chat with Marty and a few other people, and it was much smaller than what it is today. And actually worked for the old Splice Overwatch team on the video side. So did a lot of the tutorials and things like that re-released, which is always funny kind of connecting back with the players that you worked with on a way different thing. And yeah, eventually then moved to Berlin and became the team manager for League of Legends. Splice was then acquired by Overactive Media. And then I've also was put in charge of Counter-Strike because we added that for the European market. And basically, since last year, I've been asked to help out the Defiant and Ultra, so our North American-based teams. And yeah, now I'm basically leading all team operations at Overactive Media.
Wow. And so, you know, the journey that you describe is not, I'm not going to suggest unique. I mean, we've heard from many, Kasoras, Broy from the Vancouver Titans had joined us and what have you. And it's just, I think it speaks to the diversity within the context of esports and how there is a lot of similarities around, multiple titles and I think as a segue, one of the things that Overactive Media does have is multiple, properties or teams. With you sort of now becoming more involved with, as you said, the Toronto Ultra and the Toronto Defiant, do you see that there are synergies with the experience that you would have had with Mad Lions and League would be applicable within, the Overwatch League specifically?
Absolutely. It's actually one of the big plans that we have for both teams, but actually specifically Defiant this year. Because we've seen a lot of the systems that we have applied in League of Legends and Europe overall have worked really well for kind of long competitive success over multiple years, which is in Overwatch we've not yet had. I think there are a lot of learnings that where we're kind of quite far ahead in Europe, generally speaking, that we can bring to North America or North American-based teams. And it's not actually just myself who's getting that responsibility. Martina, who used to be our sports psychologist over in Europe, has now been promoted to run kind of the performance division overall in North America and actually just moved to Toronto for the next year. So we're bringing a lot of these resources actually that have experience in Europe over to now further support our North American teams and kind of move up that level of competition, the level of operations that we have to, ideally get more victories.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, this is a conversation longtime listeners of our show have heard of us have with Adam and Katie Ju, previously joined us, former coach of the Defiant, even Kasoris as recently as a couple of weeks ago, is that when we look at the different teams under the Overactive banner, the Mad Lions, they've seen considerable success. Toronto Ultra, they've seen considerable success. In fact, just as recent as a couple of weeks ago, winning a major. And yet with the Toronto Defiant, success doesn't seem to be happening as easily. And I'm not trying to discount the efforts of the other teams, but I know Adam had said this, all along, like, we want this team to win. When he joined us last year, he's like, yeah, we figured it out here. And we're trying to understand what we could do, with the Defiant. And, you were talking about bringing over some of the learnings from League or from Europe. What might some of those be?
Yeah, so I think our general philosophy is the short version of it is that we build great teams, we don't buy them. And if I look at Ultra and League of Legends, in the Ultra, we've won a major, and every single one of these players went through our academy system or was a substitute of ours. They all came exclusively through our system, and that's how we were able to win. And in the LEC, the same. We've had 3 or 4 years where we've only ever signed rookie players that had no LEC experience, that we completely formed ourselves and kind of turned into championship-winning players. And it's not even that that's the strategy. You just need to hire rookies, and that's how you succeed. But I think it shows to have a great system when you can take rookies and turn them into really great players. Mm-hmm. And I specifically like the kind of teams where the team is greater than the sum of its part. And I think that's something we've had a lot of success building building with the Ultra or League of Legends or even other titles, and where we kind of need to catch up on the Defiant side. And this is the kind of journey we're starting on with Caceres now. So we'll bring kind of a coach like him. We've interviewed a lot of coaches, and I think his philosophy really matches with that. And the goal really for the Defiant is less about we need to place this in the standings. The goal really for me for this year is at the end of the year, we need to have a system that works. And a system that works is one that's very strong coaching staff. In all the titles where we've had success for so long, we had kind of industry-leading coaches, and we have very strong performance support staff. So sports psychologists, performance manager, these kind of things. And in Defiant, I now want to see at the end of the year a system where Cass is a really strong head coach with kind of a system of developing his coaches below that, performance support, and all these things to then really get the roster kind of further and further, instead of saying we need to be this place and then we're all happy. And kind of really having that long-term thinking, okay, how does it look in 2 years? How does it look in 3 years? And having a coach that's also with us for kind of that time period, which Casper is subscribed to with us, that is what we're trying to bring to the Defiant, and that takes time. But in other titles, we've taken the time to figure that out, and now we want to do that here as well.
Yeah. You mentioned sort of growing from within, having, you know, an academy operation. Has there been thought about bringing back the, you know, Montreal Rebellion? This was the Toronto Defiance, you know, contenders team from years ago. I know in the Overwatch League, some teams have had academy teams. Others have partnered with a few, and we've seen that ecosystem go through a lot of change for a variety of reasons. Too many to discuss on a, you know, simple show like ours. But, you know, specifically with the Defiant, is there some thought there to try to then, you know, set that, you know, not maybe foundation, but those seedlings, so to speak?
Mm-hmm. It's certainly something that we've thought about, but I think for us, it's actually a lot more about the ability of the main team to take on any kind of player. It doesn't just need to be rookies. Mm-hmm. And create a team environment that works. To me, that is the more important part of it than to say, okay, we need three academy teams and source the talent through there, which actually, if I look at esport overall, has not been done as well. In traditional sports, there's a lot of organizations who have incredibly strong kind of second, third teams and bring up talent and do that really well. In esports, a lot of the time that doesn't really work. It's more that, for example, for us in League of Legends, we've been known to do really well with rookies. So we can just look at every team in Europe that's kind of in the lower level. And if we want to sign a rookie, then we can probably just sign them because we've kind of proven that success. So to me, it's more important to build that system where a player, if they join us, they know that they're an environment here where they can perform at their peak, because we've picked the roster in the right way, we've given them the right support infrastructure, and we've invested more heavily in that than to just get superstars. It's the idea of kind of building teams and not just kind of buying the superstars, which we've seen a lot of super teams fail. I've never been a big fan of super teams, and it's also much more satisfying to have a team that wins from the people that you've kind of worked with from the start and where you really saw the growth in the individual.
Yeah. You know, originally being a Vancouver Titans podcast, I mean, the Vancouver Titans in their first season, quote unquote, bought a super team. Did it work for a bit of the season? Unfortunately, probably not to the end as that organization might have liked. But then I could sort of look at the Toronto Defiant perspective and see the team that was put together last season arguably was a super team. Like, yeah. You know, the signing of Twilight generated considerable pop in the Overwatch scene. So, you know, what we're seeing with the roster that has been built now, I think generated an excitement, but no one goes and says, that's the, you know, super team. Like I'm just referencing someone like, you know, the Boston Uprising, who I think surprised many in how they went to construct. So bringing this sort of to the conversation of, you know, having all of the you know, the sum of all parts contributing to the success of the team, is the idea that this is a multi-year plan? Because we've heard, you know, from those before you, there's a two-year plan, we're setting a foundation, yet each season that seems to reset, like the Toronto Defiant being no different, where we've seen a lot of turnover. Is the hope that, hey, we've got something we're going to build upon? Yeah, maybe make a tweak or two. But, you know, set forth a multi-year goal?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything that I say right now wouldn't, if we then change the entire roster again and then go back to a full career next year, then that's kind of a full reset again. That's actually something that when I look at kind of us from the outside, resetting every year is like, obviously you can get kind of lucky in the sense that you just kind of sign the right people. But usually if I look at any title that we've won in, it's been a often 3-year process from getting the first building block to then getting the team together. And that's what we're looking for here as well. And that's how we've signed the support staff around these guys. And it's all why we signed the current team, because we do believe there's potential to work with in the long term. And in the end, it's just something that we need to show by next offseason that we can kind of keep this roster and the system together. And with Caceres, we've signed the right head coach who can, we can keep with for the long term. Because if I look at any title that we've been good at, we've worked with the head coach for many, many years. It's been kind of the same coach. Mm-hmm. And even when we've changed from a coach, it's been like the prodigy of that coach coming up and still having the same system. I think if you can have multiple years with the same system, that allows you to not just sign the best player on paper that everyone wants, but you can sign the best player for your team because you know exactly how you operate, what you need. And I think that puts you in a much better position off season. But if you reset every time, that obviously gets pretty hard.
You talk about having sort of a support system for the players, and you've talked sort of having a sports psychologist available. You know, what other supports exist or are you looking to implement for the players who, you know, are playing for the Defiant this season?
So yeah, sports psychology is one thing. As I mentioned, Martina is coming over from Europe to come in because I do believe playing video games for a living, it always sounds nice. Oh, play video games for a living, you get paid well for it. It must be great, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously it is an amazing job, but it's also extremely mentally taxing. The kind of what people deal with on Reddit after just having one bad day, the kind of pressure, also the difference in traditional sport. People usually come up through having played the sport in the team environment since the age of 5. Most esport players come up because they sat in the bedroom and played a video game very good. And then all of a sudden get in a team environment, but the team environment is already in front of hundreds of thousands of people. So it's a big difference of sports. So supporting players through that journey with professional help on the side, I think is very, very important, not just for them to perform, but also for them to just be okay in what they do. So that's kind of one thing. The second side is a performance manager, which we define more as the exercise, nutrition, sleep, all these kind of things, even potential wrist pain and everything else that players can get from playing video games for too long. Actually doing some preventative measures there we value quite a bit. So those are resources that we provide to the Defiant and kind of share with the Ultra as well. And then we're looking to upgrade a few things from kind of the food, kind of chef there, things like that that we already do in Europe that we really believe in the long term do make a difference, because the kind of nutrition habits of some players right now are maybe not that optimal yet. And there's definitely ways to optimize that. And we do believe that doing all those things the right way not only makes it kind of easier for them to compete, but also makes them better. And that we always hope that they take something away from that even after they leave us eventually and kind of have some better and healthy habits in life. Because even a normal job, that can definitely be useful.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, what you're describing sounds quite a bit like what we heard from Sean Gilchrist. So for those that may not have listened to our episode last week, Sean is the father of the Vancouver Titans, Tank Punk. And he had talked about, you know, for him as a father, priorities being, you know, play these young adults learning how to, you know, not only exist within the context of the professional world, but picking up those good habits, getting the support, eating right. I mean, he and I actually chatted about this on our show, and he inspired me to start, you know, thinking about how I consume food. And I'm a very old person here. I could arguably be a father of an Overwatch League pro at this stage of my life. So hearing you describe everything that you're doing with the Toronto Defiant and obviously the Ultra and the Mad Lions is good, but is this not something that happens, you know, across the league, or is it just sort of some teams prioritize that over others?
Honestly, Overwatch is probably very far behind there. It's compared to even like tier 2 League of Legends in Europe, Overwatch is quite far behind in terms of the performance infrastructure that's provided. And this isn't all teams. There are certainly teams that do it really well. Mm-hmm. And there are certainly teams that do kind of very little in comparison. To me, that's an opportunity because it means we can come in and provide our support, and kind of we always strive to provide the best level of support. Like in the end, my job is to create an environment that is the best in the league for the players. Does that not mean we win every game, of course, and we win every kind of season? But in the long term, if you have an environment that's kind of the best of the league, then that should kind of bring the results in. But yeah, I do believe Overwatch is a bit behind there, unfortunately. But I hope that kind of as a league together, we can pull up there, because even just supporting these players correctly is quite important, even not just on the performance side, but also them as people.
Yeah. Talking a little bit about the league in general here. You know, we ask this question to all of our guests. If you, you know, were provided the opportunity to be league commissioner for the day, or, you know, head of Overwatch League, and this is not a, you know, a suggestion that, you know, Sean Miller isn't fulfilling the role, just maybe there was a contest and Till Vertimann is, you know, the lucky winner. Is there anything that you would look to implement league-wide, or anything that you would look to potentially shift or change?
I think one thing that is very interesting is the whole idea of how do we get people that are not that used to esport or Overwatch itself, how do we get them to watch the game and understand what's happening? It's something that I see a lot in our company. We usually try to do presentations on this is how you watch this match, because obviously we have people join us who work in accounting or something else who kind of maybe understand gaming, but they're not esport pros, and that's fine. So we usually try to do presentations at the start of the season on, okay, this is how you actually watch the game, how you play it, but these are the things you watch for. This is important. This is a good play. This makes that. And Overwatch, for someone that isn't used to it, can be quite hard to understand. I think it was Dota for the International that used to have it. It had like a beginner side stream where people that were new to the game could tune in, and I think it had like unique animations and things like that to kind of really show people how that could be done. I don't think that's something that gathers like incredible viewership, but just the ability to point new fans in that direction is really great. Like, for example, my father watches most of the games we're in, and he's gotten pretty decent at League of Legends yet, but clearly Overwatch is new to him. So where do I point him to like understand that game further? There aren't kind of too many resources in that. So I think that is an opportunity. And otherwise, kind of always looking at what are other kind of titles doing. I think LEC, for example, in Europe had a great format change that was exciting. Call of Duty, the co-streaming that's done on Twitch now has really increased viewership. I believe the last major that we won had the highest viewership in any Call of Duty event, if I'm not wrong. So kind of even in that ecosystem, there's something really interesting happening. So just looking at what other leagues are doing and taking kind of inspiration from that, I think that's always a good thing to do.
Yeah, it's actually a similar point that I think has been brought up. You know, Kasaurus had mentioned something very similar, Broy, in our conversation with him. And, you know, I think back to, you know, when our podcast started, it was the second season in the Overwatch League, very successful. And in North America here, traditional sports channels, our linear television networks, were carrying like an Overwatch League match of the week. In fact, the grand final was on a major US network during what would be considered sports prime time. And I remember sitting down with my mom, who, she knows that her son has this video game podcast, and she supports me because, you know, I really enjoy what I do. But she's watching what's going on the screen. It's a very frenetic experience. She was invested because obviously I'm interested in it. But when she's asking, hey, you know, what's going on, I actually didn't even think of that myself. Like, wouldn't that be, you know, nice to have someone or something that I could sort of direct her to, whether it be a crash course, a slower sort of paced, you know, experience. Again, my mom, probably not the group that we would be looking to maybe not reach out to, but I think that's maybe an opportunity that's overlooked. And I don't know why, obviously, but I know on our podcast, we often talk about finding ways to be more inclusive of, you know, fans, like making that transition from, you know, the super competitive, super ingrained, you know, fan base that you'll find on, you know, Reddit and in the scene, but then the more casual side. And I always wonder why that bridge isn't ever sort of built, at least with the, you know, game of Overwatch. I don't have enough knowledge to suggest it has or has not happened, but based on what you've described, you know, it sounds like others are ahead. So is there anything that the Defiant can do to try to push that forward? I imagine you are, but you're sort of, you know, in the league sense, still the sum of all parts. And some organizations may be invested in the idea more than others. Like, are there things that you do in the sort of behind the scenes to try to either pull or push?
I mean, certainly from our side, we could obviously do content in that direction. I think that the issues with that kind of content is that it doesn't kind of bring you the numbers right away. So I think it's important to do, because even the lower numbers that you get kind of can convert new fans into it. But as a team of kind of limited resource, of course, that might be hard to justify. It's actually interesting. I remember doing tutorial videos for Overwatch back in the day when I was on Splice, even though those were maybe less kind of how to watch the esport. It was more kind of how to play Overwatch itself. But yeah, maybe it is kind of, maybe if I speak about it, there's more we can do ourselves to kind of do that type of content and then kind of find the right audience for it and make sure that they can enjoy the beautiful game that is Overwatch.
Yeah. And, you know, please understand, Nick, we often talk on our show, I feel the Defiant do things the right way, whether it be just the simple aspect of engaging a community throughout an off season that in the Overwatch League seems to last forever. I don't know if it's like this in League or Call of Duty. It doesn't feel like it is based on the fact that I hear about it and I'm not even following. Whereas, you know, we are a podcast that also covers the Vancouver Titans. And if there's one thing that the Vancouver Titans have done in the past is sort of turned off the lights and it got a little dark. And I feel that, you know, you lose that momentum you've built up, and the Defiant, you know, do seem to understand, hey, let's keep those lights on, keep people engaged, you know, push, use the momentum we have to do something even bigger and broader. As a segue, we've talked about this with Adam in past years about, under the context of, hey, you know, do you look around the league and say, hey, they're doing things well and we'd like to do that too? And he had suggested, like, we, you know, obviously we would. I'm going to ask the opposite. Are there other teams that come and knock on your door and say, hey, we like what you're doing, can you help us? Or is that still perceived as the competitive advantage or the secret and we got to keep that close to our vest?
I think it really depends on the area. So obviously on the competitive side, people like to be a bit more secretive, especially when it gets very close to the game and obviously meta related things, stuff like that. I think we had a lot of positive feedback from other teams as well when we hosted the event last year, kind of bringing everyone to Toronto being a great city for that, the fans being amazing. I think we've got a lot of positive feedback there, and other teams obviously looking at that and being like, okay, we can kind of do something similar, even though other teams have obviously hosted great events as well. I think that's been kind of one of the things where we've had a kind of engagement with other teams on the topic like that.
Yeah. Summer Showdown last season, a phenomenal event. While I didn't get the opportunity to come to Toronto and experience it firsthand, one thing that really struck me as being different was how the Defiant organization created a space for content creators like us to be involved from afar. There was an event Discord. There were press conferences. It was set up to allow for us to attend virtually and help, I think, amplify the experience. And one of the things that I feel that the league misses out on are these sort of post-match experiences. Yeah, the Overwatch League runs a pre-show. And then you see the event and there's that one player interview of the winning team. And, you know, it's the next match. And then there might be a wrap up. But I look at traditional sports, and this is regardless of what traditional sport you're a fan of, there are opportunities to hear from both teams. In fact, like, sometimes there's opportunities to hear from officials. I may not be as interested unless they, you know, made a controversial call against the team I support, but hey, it helps it provide a layer of understanding that I feel the Overwatch League is well suited to do and doesn't. So, you know, talking about that experience, is that something that we might see more of? Has Toronto said, hey, look what we did, here's how you do it, let's make that happen? Or is this still something where, well, we'll continue to be the leader and hopefully others catch up?
I believe our marketing team did a fantastic job for the Summer Showdown. Even some of the TikTokers that they invited, it had massive followings. I myself, I'm not really on TikTok, but some of the numbers there are absolutely incredible. And it actually, again, comes back to the idea of bringing new people to Overwatch. Like, they found some creators who had kind of million follower accounts who were passionate about Overwatch, but their main TikTok content wasn't about Overwatch. But since they were passionate about the game, they would still attend and then expose Overwatch to their millions of fans. through them being authentically fans of the game, which I think that is a huge opportunity and something that we love to use an event like Summer Showdown for. So I think it's certainly that hopefully these kind of learnings we can use for other events in Overwatch going forward, if it's hosted by ourselves, or if it's hosted by other teams or by the league. Certainly that idea of not only kind of proving the general kind of experience of a fan at the event, but also exposing it to new fans, because it's the easiest way to convince someone that this is cool when you invite them to 3,000 or 4,000 people screaming live. It's much easier than, oh, here's this YouTube Twitch stream, and you don't really get the experience. Mm-hmm. I think getting people involved live is still the best way to convert them to a game like ours.
Yeah. Speaking of live events, might we see another live event in Toronto this season? And we asked Sean Miller this question, and he said we had to get Adam to sign on the dotted line, but in his stead, maybe you can.
Well, I mean, we certainly do enjoy hosting, but there isn't kind of anything I can share at this point, unfortunately.
It's too bad. I had to ask. I mean, I could have heard it here first. If you do decide, remember, people can still hear it here first. You have to reach out to me. We'll get you on. We'll make that happen. I look at the way that this season is structured. We know of two sort of keystone events with the Overwatch League this season. You've got a big tournament midway through the season. You have a grand final playoff experience near the end, which seems to be counter to what most people we have spoken to have suggested I'm not going to say ideal. I don't know what ideal happens to be, but more conducive to the introduction of these live experiences. Is there anything that you would be able to share as to sort of how that all came to be, where there was just those sort of two showcase events as opposed to like last season, there were three? And if we think back to prior to the pandemic, there were plenty. Granted, most were happening in LA, but everyone talks about how the energy that you get from that live crowd, the player's experience and all of that is just infectious. So I sort of have to ask, like, any reason for the shift?
And I think in the end, it's more of a league decision than maybe our decision. From our side, we love live events. Our players love live events. And mm-hmm. It's kind of the best way to enjoy Overwatch, or kind of most esport for that matter. In the end, it's always kind of a cost question, even from our team side. Overwatch teams are quite large. Flying everyone across North America or even further and in hotels for a long period of time obviously isn't cheap. But in the end, it's a wider league decision where we obviously kind of have our input, but I don't think kind of from my side, there's kind of as much as I can share there, even though from our side, obviously the more live events, the more kind of bigger stages we can play, the happier that makes us.
Yeah. And I look sort of to the next door neighbor with the Call of Duty League, where you have multiple live events over the course of the season. They have been well attended. You see that injury, and then we look at the Overwatch League, and understanding Overwatch League is different in that there are fully international, operations at play. But from a regional perspective, we still wonder, like, might there not be an opportunity? But hey, I'm a podcaster who doesn't have to, pull out my credit card to pay for the airfare, the hotels, the food, the, support staff having to go and travel. So it's a whole lot easier for me to say, just let's do it. As we look to wrap up here, is there anything that you wanted to share to fans of the Defiant? Anything that they can expect for the course of the season? Anything that obviously you want to have them hear first on our show today?
So I think from our side, obviously we can't promise winning in any game that we attend. Esports is much hard to predict for that. What we can promise that it will be a fun season from our side. I think the guys have been absolutely fun to hang out with. They've even the streams and the leagues and everything else. Especially what we do, it's going to be entertaining, even on the field of play or off the field of play. And I welcome all the new fans that join us with this exciting roster, and thank all the fans that have been with us for a while. And something that I always like to share with people is I hope that esports can become something that teaches people about these kind of healthy habits that we've been discussing. So because even as an esport player, most won't kind of make enough money to live off that forever. So I hope that they can bring these skills into kind of the more normal job life, or can hope that even someone who just tryhards ranked on the evening can take some kind of learnings on sleep, nutrition, things like that, and just implement them in their life, how kind of they see fit, and hopefully improve their lives with that a bit, because gaming often has this kind of negative stigma. It's just this thing. So I think if the kind of professional side of gaming, the esports side, can be seen as something that actually introduces kind of positive habits and habits that are actually specifically for people who have kind of desk office jobs, which is the norm now, because that's essentially what we optimize for in esports. It's not extreme athletes that need to run a marathon each day. It's people that sit at a desk and move their mouse and keyboard. So I think that is something that hopefully esports can bring and we can optimize for.
Cool. And a couple of personal questions. You had mentioned when you started playing Overwatch, you were a Reinhardt one trick. Are you still a Reinhardt one trick?
I'm still a Reinhardt one, even though currently, because obviously there's only one tank, one of my mates is also a tank player, so we're kind of sharing. So I've been trying to play DPS, which it's not my aim style. I've played a lot of Counter-Strike, but anytime I see an Overwatch player's their tracking aim, I'm like, this is insane. Like, I don't know how you guys do this. Like, this is mental, even for me who's played a lot of video games.
It's the quick twitch muscles with the sensitivity being off the charts. I'm good with, like, you know, analog controller Pac-Man style movement. That's why I'm not a one trick Reinhardt, but pretty darn close myself. Outside of the fact that Reinhardt is the best hero for every situation in the game, need more damage, Reinhardt, support's not getting done, Reinhardt. Why Reinhardt?
I think in most games I've always mained kind of the tank role, and in League I was a Leona one trick for a while, and I think Reinhardt when I play was really strong with Ana, and a friend of mine was actually like an almost GM level Ana, so mm-hmm. we do it a lot, and that's how I kind of got to decent ranks. So just that combo was really strong, and I enjoyed that kind of hero in any kind of game I play. And it's just fun to play a big beefy tank that still dishes out lots of damage and can occasionally just pin the enemy DPS and decide to fight that way. So it's a great hero.
Awesome. Other than Overwatch, favorite game?
Probably Counter-Strike.
Oh, okay.
Very little beats the excitement of a 1v3 clutch than Counter-Strike. I mean, obviously I played a lot of League of Legends as well, and it's a fun game, but Counter-Strike will always have a good spot in my heart for that.
Yeah. And, you know, I sort of skipped over the Canadian influence earlier in our conversation. Have you had an opportunity to visit to Toronto yet?
Yeah, quite a bit. They're usually there for about a month or sometimes longer each year, because often I fly over during off season, mm-hmm. because then I'm right there with Adam. It's not just like, oh, let me call Adam and figure out what we do, but it's just like, hey, Adam, walking over and then figuring out, okay, what are we spending all this money on across all of our teams? So yeah, I've spent the last couple of years, but I usually only go when it's cold. I need to work on that. I've barely been there during any warm temperatures. So I spent multiple months in cold Toronto. So at some point I need to come during good temperature, which hopefully for the Major 5 in Call of Duty will be possible this year.
Yeah, Toronto is unique in how it's one of the most southern areas of Canada. Like, people don't realize the Ontario Panhandle is as far south as California. The state of California is north, whereas someone like me who lives in Vancouver is actually further north than Toronto, yet we don't get as cold. We're the tropical part of Canada. I use that term loosely. But upon coming to Canada, what is your favorite, you know, piece of Canadian culture or Canadiana that you have to see, experience, or get a piece of when you come by?
I think it's just the overall hospitality. People are just really friendly. And I know that's kind of the meme, but it is really a different. In Germany, people are a lot more reserved, or generally in Europe, people are a lot more reserved. And I'm fine with that. But in Canada, people are just kind of very hospitable. It's very nice. The food is great. So overall, always just happy to come there. And it's always interesting. I remember my first time landing in Canada, I flew in through the US. And US Border Patrol was very harsh on you. And you're like, you sit there as like just 18 years old. Like, oh boy, this is something. And then we arrived in Canada and the same border, it looked the same way, but was like, oh, how was your flight? How was your day? And we're like, wait, they're nice. And it was kind of a fun experience going through that.
Yeah. I can't say I'm all that well traveled. US border services though, the description that you've provided is the consistent experience I've had, and I live next door, so you know it's if anything consistent. Although I'd have to say, the few times I've gone to the UK, their border services are even more stern than the US side. Joking, I found, is not the path to take. Whereas at least with the US border services every so often and get them a crack, a smile. Till, thank you again for joining me. If fans of the show want to track you down on Twitter, you're, is it Feiron42 or F-E Iron? Yep. So Iron. I took chemistry in school. So
I've actually came up with that by accident. Which is
really?
Funny. Yeah, that was just the name I had for Fire Mage in an MMORPG back in the day. And I don't think I spoke enough English at the time to realize what it meant. And then 42 was just my favorite number, given the great book it's based on. But it's also the number for iron in Minecraft. So my name had a theme that I came up with
iron.
Completely on accident. So, oh. You know?
Well, okay. See, that's how in depth with sort of video game knowledge that you possess that you're now going to apply, in your expanded role with the Defiant. But again, thank you for joining us. That is Till Vertimann, Senior Director of Team Operations from Overactive Media. I will be right back to wrap up this episode. That was a pretty cool conversation. I mean, if you've been listening to our show for as long as we've been around, one of the things that we've always been appreciative of is the transparency that we receive from those within the Toronto Defiant organization. I mean, Adam, when he has joined us in the past, has shared with us quite a bit of perspective from how the business works to the operations of the team and in a broader sense, the league. And I feel that Till provided us an even, deeper glance into how the team is really planning out not only this season, but subsequent seasons within the context of OWL. We didn't get this as part of the conversation. We actually talked a little bit about after when we hit the stop button. But one of the things that he, really expressed is how the team wants to provide the players an opportunity to succeed beyond the game. And this would be, in the professional sense, like, what do you go on and do after you retire as a professional esports player, or in this case, an Overwatch League player, whether it be coaching or whether you might be going into school or back to your studies, what area, and are there those that you can connect with internally that can help you, set yourself up for success. And I think it's something that the Toronto Defiant have done and talked about. I mean, Adam has talked about, the well-being of players regularly, and it isn't something we have seen from many other teams. I know that, Vancouver Titans attempted to do something like this in that, season prior to the pandemic. And in talking to Broy and hearing from him this season, it sounds something like they want to sort of reprioritize. If you listen to our conversation with, Sean Gilchrist, Punk's dad, this was a big thing for him, something he wanted to see, more of. And the perspective of a father, is obviously going to be different than that of an organization or operation. But what we heard from Till in this conversation, I think really resonates with how probably teams can be better able to not only set themselves up to be in a position to succeed, but set up those players who do take part professionally for them to succeed beyond the game. And that's extremely important. And I genuinely wonder, does that also provide teams like the Toronto Defiant that competitive advantage, not in the sense of what you see in the results in game, but when it comes to attracting the top talent within the league? Till did mention in our conversation that, it's about the sum of the parts, identifying talent. He had talked about how they've done really well with the Mad Lions at identifying talent and being able to go and say, hey, that's a player we want, let's sign them. Well, in the Overwatch League, if this is something that they're able to do and they're competing amongst other teams for these players, I can imagine having a holistic operation that supports the player beyond what they do in front of a keyboard and on the screen to everything behind will help lift that conversation above the rest. I mean, I could imagine if I were to go to my parents, if I'm wondering where should I go, my parents would probably be very supportive of me choosing a team who's going to, you know, help me learn how to eat right, how to, you know, professionally, you know, act within the context of this sort of real world, how to focus on my health and my personal well-being. So, you know, congratulations, Defiant, for getting that. I know you have, but to hear, you know, that being reinforced in this conversation, is truly, you know, good to hear. Anyhow, this is just a bonus episode. The conversation is done. As I let off, lots going on in the league. We'll talk more about it in our regularly scheduled episode next week. If this happened to be the first episode you've listened to and you're like, hey, I like this show, I want to tune in more often, you can find our entire back catalog at ReadySetPwn.com. We are on social media at ReadySetPwn. You can take part in the conversation that we have regularly in our Discord, discord.io/ReadySetPwn. And if you've reached this point, you're like, I just want to tune in next week too, go to your favorite podcast application and subscribe. Hit that button. We are going to be coming to you every 2 weeks for now. Though in the past few weeks, it's been weekly with these bonus episodes. But shortly, as the season fast approaches, we will transition to our weekly scheduled episodes where we provide you everything that you need to know about the Overwatch League in the Canadian context, the Toronto Defiant, the Vancouver Titans, and everything that you need to know about the game itself. So on behalf of Omni at Omni Strife, Jordan at Sir Dr. JM, the host of the One Man Watchpoint podcast, he too also provides you all the content you need to know. And myself, Chris at Lightforce, signing off this bonus episode with Catchphrase.